It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The U.S. carries out airstrike against senior al-Shabaab leader in Somalia. New cases of Ebola reported in West Africa and the United Kingdom. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The United States has carried out an airstrike against what the officials call a senior al-Shabaab leader in Somalia. A U.S. military spokesman says the attack Monday was near Sako. In September, another U.S. airstrike in Somalia killed al-Shabaab leader Ahmed Abdi Godani. In West Africa, new cases of Ebola have been reported. A five-day Christmas holiday lockdown in Sierra Leone in preventing the spread of the deadly virus ended Monday. Similar restrictions are to be in effect for New Year's. While an assessment of its effectiveness is expected soon, new cases have been reported in the hard-hit Kono mining district. In neighboring Liberia, new cases have erupted near their shared border. The flare-up is blamed on a number of factors, including traditional burial practices. 49 cases have been reported in western Grand Cape Mount County during the month of December. Meanwhile, a health worker recently in Sierra Leone has been diagnosed with Ebola by doctors in Glasgow, Scotland. Nicola Sturgeon is the Scottish First Minister.
The patient returned to Glasgow late last night and, after feeling unwell, was admitted to hospital early this morning. The patient is currently stable and is in isolation at the Brownlee Hospital, pending transfer to the UK's high-level isolation hospital in London.
This is the first Ebola case diagnosed inside the United Kingdom. British male nurse William Pooley contracted the disease while in Sierra Leone, was returned for treatment to UK, and has since returned to West Africa. Meanwhile, Cuban doctor Felix Baez, cured of Ebola after contracting the disease in Sierra Leone, said Monday he will also return to West Africa. This is VOA News. Hundreds of displaced Muslims trapped in the Central African Republic town of Yaloke are, according to the United Nations, becoming increasingly vulnerable to attack. Nick Long reports the UN Refugee Agency is currently in talks with the CAR government to relocate the ethnic Pearls, who have fled anti-Balaka militia groups.
A mission led by the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Bangui recently visited Yaloke to provide medical help. The doctor with the mission, Elkana Dawacha, told VOA what he saw. He said the Pearl situation is deplorable and action must be taken urgently to save them. He described their living conditions as appalling. He said 40 people in the group died between April and December. Aid agencies say that figure includes 13 children. They say it's a far higher mortality rate than in the surrounding community, where only one death of a child was reported in the same period. The main causes of mortality among the children have been malaria and malnutrition, says Ndawacha. Many of the children, he says, display typical signs of protein deficiency, badly swollen feet, cheeks and eyelids, and emaciated bodies. The UN Refugee Agency also recently sent a mission to Yaloke, the second time UNHCR has visited the Pearl community there since August. On both visits, UNHCR found that more than 90% of the Pearls wanted to leave the country and were asking for an escort so they could do so safely. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
The United Nations Monday said it's begun delivering food aid to war-torn South Sudan via the Nile River from Sudan for the first time since independence in 2011, and warns the country faces a hunger catastrophe. The corridor is expected to reduce reliance on more expensive delivery by air. The border between the two countries has been heavily militarized, cutting off virtually all commercial and humanitarian traffic. Tunisia's newly elected president, Baji Kaid Essebsi, will be sworn in Wednesday at a ceremony in parliament, now dominated by his secularist Nida Tunis party. The election of the 88-year-old political veteran is seen as a landmark event for the birthplace of the so-called Arab Spring nearly 4 years ago that toppled autocratic ruler Zayn el-Abidine Ben Ali. His victory over interim leader Mansif Marzouki completed the North African country's transition to democracy, winning praise from many Western governments. A Senegalese court on Monday rejected bail for former President Abdoulaye Wade's son, Karim, who's accused of amassing a multi-million-dollar fortune through corrupt means during his time with his father's administration. The special court on illegal enrichment turned down the request on the grounds that it could risk disrupting the public order and resulted in intimidation of witnesses. 10 people have been implicated in the case, but only Watt and a co-defendant, Mamadou Poulia, have been detained. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's ruling NRM party appears to be on a collision course with its current Secretary General.
He was elected for the 5-year term of office by the appropriate organs of the party, and he has to serve that term of office for 5 years until July next year. He is still the Secretary General.
Severino Twinubu Singe is the lawyer for former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi. Are supporters of Zimbabwe's new vice president turning on each other? Libya tries to extinguish oil tank fires. 2014 was a tough and rowdy year for South African politics. And 2014 saw an Ebola state of emergency in Liberia.
The president is responding to the grave situation we now confront. It is obviously a clear and present danger to the collective survival of our nation.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown spoke with VOA in August, and funding for clean cooking stoves get a global boost. Those stories plus Mark Oman's sports and our listener of the day coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Uganda, the ruling National Resistance Movement, or the NRM, appears to be on a collision course come this Thursday, January 1st. The party decided at its December 15 national conference to replace former Prime Minister and current Secretary General Amama Mbabazi. His replacement, Ms. Justine Kasuli Lumumba, is expected to report for duty January 1st. New Year's Day, but Mr. Mbabazi has gone to court to challenge his removal. His lawyer, Severino Twinubu Singe, says his client was elected to serve for 5 years and he intends to remain Secretary General until his term expires in July 2015.
He was elected for the 5-year term of office by the appropriate organs of the party, and he has to run that office, serve that term of office for 5 years, until July next year. He is still the Secretary General. The reason for this is because the political parties in Uganda are governed by the Political Parties and Organizations Act. That law is made pursuant to the provisions of the Constitution of the Republic of Uganda. Now, the Constitution of the Republic of Uganda prohibits certain actions that were done by the who purported to gather and claim to have carried out a delegates conference where they purported to have ousted the current Secretary General, Honorable Amama Mbabazi. What they did, I think, was an exercise in futility. It is not good for the rule of law, it is not good for civil liberty.
You sound, sir, like you have confidence in the Ugandan judicial system.
I have absolutely 100% confidence in the judicial system in Uganda. Our judiciary is independent, and we are 100% convinced that they will attend to this matter. They will determine this case to its logical conclusion. We do not see it being done either way. The judiciary of Uganda is firm, it is independent, and we are very sure it will adjudicate over these matters and settle them once and for all.
So when do you expect the court will conclude this case?
Well, the courts are now on the Christmas break. They have a Christmas vacation. We expect courts to resume perhaps in the second week of next month, January. So as soon as they come, we hope that the process will start. What is very important is that constitutional matters under Ugandan jurisprudence take precedence over all other matters of court.
So can we say that we expect confrontation, let's say, comes January 1st, and the court has not decided, and yet Mr. Mbabazi is still considered the Secretary General?
We do not expect confrontation. Ugandans are peaceful, and they understand what they are going through. We don't expect any confrontation at all.
So you do not expect that if he decides to continue in his position, that Mr. Museveni might not order his arrest?
We don't think that can happen, because the president, who is the party chairman, himself knows that the current Secretary General was elected to serve for 5 years. He was elected the same day the party chairman, Yoweri Museveni, was elected. The party chairman is in office, he's going to serve for 5 years. The Secretary General, who was elected with him, is also going to serve in the term of office for 5 years. That is what is expected. We don't expect any confrontation.
You've been very kind, and I thank you very much again. If I do not speak with you again until the new year, let me wish you a happy new year.
Welcome to you, my brother. Thank you very much. It has been a pleasure talking to you.
Severino Twinobusinge is the lawyer for former Ugandan Prime Minister and current Secretary General of the ruling NRM party, Amama Mbabazi. He was speaking with me from Kampala. The backlash against ZANU-PF officials perceived to be over-idolizing Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa is the strongest indication yet that Mr. Mnangagwa's loyalists may be turning against each other after crushing the faction allegedly led by Joyce Mujuru. So says some analysts. Provincial Minister Fabro Chiderikari is the latest official to take flak from the state media after he introduced Mr. Mnangagwa's wife at a weekend party as the acting first lady. Political analyst Chimunuwa Mandirize says the alleged Mnangagwa faction appears to be imploding.
I would say politics is a game of coups and counter coups. It therefore doesn't come as a surprise. I mean, that we are witnessing campaigns within a previously intact and determined faction that barely a month ago was purposely united in destroying the alleged Mujuru-led faction. All what this entails, I mean, is a weakened ZANU-PF that has forever departed from its values, a ZANU-PF with no single center of power at the moment, as was the case in the 1990s and in the early 2000s. And the problem emanates from the Congress itself. What came out from the Congress is illegitimate. To anyone who was following ZANU-PF as a supporter, and to anyone who was, a ZANU-PF leader, it was illegitimate and illegal because they breached a number of constitutional party constitution provisions. And this is now backfiring to the Mnangagwa faction.
And who are these people, Mr. Mandirize, that you are saying are now rallying against Mr. Mnangagwa?
I would want to suspect that Jonathan Moyo, being the one who had been at the helm of information, state-controlled, information disseminators, I think he's the one behind all these shenanigans and all these attempted coups. I would name him and say he's the one behind the destruction of Mujuru, and he's the one now with a new agenda of destroying Mnangagwa.
That was political analyst Chimunuwa Mandirize speaking with reporter Ntungimile Nkomo of Viewers Zimbabwe program. But a ZANU-PF official, Nicholas Mnangagwa, says the infighting is imaginary.
We are talking of people having a party, yeah? So when you are at a party, people will say whatever they say because people are having a party. These are not political gatherings. These were not rallies. These were just functions where people were celebrating. How many times people say things which are offside at a party? At some point, say, oh, what were you talking about? I think you were drunk or whatever. I'm not saying these guys were drunk. I'm simply saying you have to put everything in the context of what was the event, what was happening at that event, and not read too much into it. No, it's not a religion. It's a political party full of individuals who got opinions, full of individuals who some who are very gifted in charisma or articulation, some who are not so eloquent, some who probably say something that they don't really mean to say in that sense. So let's not read too much into any of those.
If there is no implosion here, Mr. Mangwana, why then all this heavy-handed backlash?
What do you mean by backlash? A backlash from the media. Come on, it's Christmas time. There's no news. There's nothing happening in Zimbabwe right now because it's Christmas period. So anything happening around Christmas would be big news. But there is no implosion.
It's the same media that took Mujuru to the cleaners. And it seems now is doing the same against Mr. Mnangagwa's glorifiers.
Well, they are commenting on things that would be offside. All that's happening is the media is simply saying some people are getting overexcited. Don't get overexcited.
ZANU-PF official Nicholas Mangwana was speaking with Ntungimile Nkomo of Viewers Zimbabwe Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Tuesday, December 30th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Libyan television reports that local firefighters have extinguished fires in several oil storage tanks in the port of Sidra on Monday, but other boilers are still on fire. The internationally recognized government in Tobruk and the Islamist militia coalition in the capital Tripoli are accusing each other of attacking the storage tanks. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
The fires in the region known as Libya's oil triangle have sent world oil prices up slightly and raised worries of serious environmental damage. Libyan TV reports local firefighters succeeded in putting out fires in several oil storage tanks, but other Arab media showed video footage of a giant blaze which continued to burn, pouring toxic black smoke into the air. Libyan officials have appealed to Italy for help putting out the fires, but the Italian government said that it would do so only when violence between the Islamist militia coalition in Tripoli and forces loyal to the government in Tobruk had stopped. Libyan oil expert Tariq Ibrahim told state TV that the fires represent a major economic loss for the country. He says the damage has cost Libya $180 million. He estimates it will take at least 3 years to repair or rebuild the tanks. Oil exports from both Sidra and the neighboring port of Ras Lanuf were stopped several weeks ago after the self-proclaimed government of Omar al-Hassi in Tripoli vowed to capture the oil facilities from the internationally recognized government of Abdullah Athani. Witnesses say the blaze in the storage tanks started when the Islamist Fajr militia coalition fired rockets at Sidra last week in a failed attempt to capture it. A Fajr militia spokesman, however, claimed its opponents were responsible for the fires. Militia spokesman Ismail Shukri also said Libyan fighter jets loyal to the Thani government and retired military commander Khalifa Haftar had bombed the ports of Sidra and Ben Jawad Monday, causing several casualties. VOA could not independently confirm the claim. Fighter jets from forces loyal to General Haftar bombed several targets in recent days, including the runway at Misrata Airport over the weekend. A spokesman for Haftar said the attacks were meant to prevent fighter jets under control of the Islamist militia coalition from taking off. The United Nations mission to Libya condemned the attack on Misrata Airport, saying that it would make the situation worse and could lead to chaos or total war. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Ebola was perhaps the biggest story in 2014 in West Africa, killing more than 7,000 people. Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone were the hardest hit. In Liberia, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf declared a state of emergency in August. Information Minister Louise Brown explained to VOA why the president felt it necessary to impose the state of emergency.
A state of emergency in Liberia is the highest level of emergency that our law allows. The president is responding to the grave situation we now confront. It is obviously a clear and present danger to the collective survival of our nation, and so she has elevated our national emergency to this very high level. In an address tonight, the president recounted the dreadfulness of this virus, the fact that it is attacking our way of life. It is having a death toll on not just healthcare workers, but many of our citizens. And there is also growing economic constraint that this disease has placed on us.
Mr. Minister, the president said that the government will institute extraordinary measures, including, if need be, the suspension of certain rights and privileges. What does this mean?
Well, you know that we enjoy the right to freedom of movement in our country. Because the measures will be extraordinary, it could mean that some rights, including freedom of movement, will be still, as I speak to you, Operation White Shield has been launched. It is expected to gain full operational status by Friday. Operation White Shield is a sort of quarantine operation by the military to ensure that we restrict the movement of people from affected communities to unaffected communities, and the reverse is also true.
So the government has shut down markets in affected areas. How would the people in those areas eat or meet their daily needs?
Well, we've begun to shut down markets to restrict the large gathering of people because in an unprecedented way, I should say, this virus is manifesting itself in populated places, making it even more difficult to control. As people move about, it becomes increasingly difficult to control. The death toll continues to rise. So clearly we have to take some extraordinary measures, not because we like to do it, but because we must do it. And so beginning with border points where there were, as you may remember, open markets where people interact as freely as they can. We're beginning to restrict these kinds of movement, first to keep unaffected areas unaffected and to get a grip on the outbreak in affected areas.
Liberia's Information Minister, Louis Brown, spoke with VOA in August 2014 about an Ebola state of emergency. South Africa's leading opposition party has issued a scathing end-of-year assessment that accuses top officials in the ruling party of failing the nation in 2014. It is the latest salvo in an increasingly bitter battle of words between the ruling African National Congress, its increasingly vocal political critics, and a growing number of South African voters. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Power looks back at the ANC's 20th year in power.
Even South Africa's ruling African National Congress agrees that 2014 has been a trying year. It was the nation's first entire year without the guiding light of South Africa's most beloved citizen, Nelson Mandela, who died in late 2013. The party's work was also hampered by a series of high-level corruption scandals, plus the ongoing challenges of meeting the needs of a nation that remains deeply unequal. And, on top of all of that, it was also an election year. Here's ANC spokeswoman Kusela Sangoni.
2014 has been a very eventful year, I think, for the African National Congress and South Africa as a whole. It has been trying in some respects because you'll remember that our economy has not fully recovered from the global recession. However, it's also been a year where our democracy was once again tested in 2014 general elections, and the people of South Africa once again reaffirmed their confidence in the African National Congress.
The ANC has ended its 20th year of uninterrupted power the same way it always has, with a comfortable majority in Parliament. But those numbers hide some serious chinks in the party's armor. The ANC has encountered some major political challenges this year, and a growing threat from an increasingly emboldened opposition that claims that the ANC is abusing its majority and using state organs for political means. The nation's opposition, once relegated to the peanut gallery, this year won more seats than ever before, as the ANC lost nearly 4 percentage points and 15 parliamentary seats. Those seats have been taken up by an opposition that has brought its rowdy antics to the front row. This year, opposition members were involved in two shouting matches in Parliament, one of which degenerated into a fist fight after riot police stormed the chamber. Democratic Alliance parliamentary leader Musi Maimane says the scuffles obscure a larger problem, the ANC's attempts to hamstring institutions, like Parliament, that are charged with holding the presidency in check. The decision to call riot police into the chamber, he says, is a dangerous abuse of the ANC's majority. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Efforts to fight a health problem that is bigger than HIV, tuberculosis, or malaria are getting a $413 million boost. Indoor air pollution, mainly from smoky coke fires, kills more than 4 million people each year. A two-day conference held earlier this year looked at drawing private industry into building and marketing better stoves. But as VOA's Steve Baragona reports, it is a field that is fraught with failures.
Traditional open-fire cooking is not just a health problem, it's also an environmental one. Collecting wood for cooking fires is a leading cause of deforestation, and the gases and soot produced from inefficient burning pollute the air and contribute to climate change. At the summit, Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said with nearly 3 billion people using traditional stoves for heating and cooking, it's a global problem.
But it also, if approached correctly, could be an economic opportunity. And that is the idea behind the alliance.
The Global Alliance for Clean Cookstoves backs companies that make and sell affordable, efficient, and less polluting cookers. It supports research into developing better stoves. Clinton helped launch the alliance in 2010. At Friday's meeting, the United States pledged $200 million in financial backing and research funds. The summit closed short of its $500 million goal, but Alliance Executive Director Radha Muthiah said 4 years after the alliance launched, 20 million more households are using clean cookstoves.
We've proven that this market-based approach works. 20 million stoves later, we know that this is a recipe that can be scaled up.
Building the market is just one ingredient in the recipe, however. That's according to Jim Jetter, cookstove researcher at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
It's a big technical challenge to make a cookstove that has low emissions of air pollutants, that is fuel efficient, and that is low cost so that people can afford it. And most importantly, that it meets the user needs. If it doesn't meet the user's needs, then people don't use the stoves, and then there are no benefits.
That's what happened in a 2012 study in Orissa, India. 15,000 households got improved stoves that had lowered indoor air pollution in lab tests. Ultimately, households with new stoves were no healthier than those with traditional ones, and they used no less fuel. Alliance executives are aware of the challenges, Muthiah says, and studying how people use the stoves is part of the research portfolio. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
And now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Attacking midfielder Yassine Brahimi has been voted Algeria's 2014 Football Player of the Year. In a countrywide media poll, Brahimi received 7,631 votes. Fellow midfielder Sofiane Feghouli was a distant second with 1,945 votes, while striker Islam Slimani was third with 941 votes. Meanwhile, basketball player Salam Meire was voted Tunisia's 2014 Sportsman of the Year by the Tunisia Sports Media and National Sports Federation Technical Directors. He received 697 votes, narrowly finishing ahead of judoka Faisal Jabala and tennis player Malik Jaziri, while handball player Muna Chaba was voted Tunisia's Sportswoman of the Year. Olympic 3,000-meter steeplechase silver medalist Habiba Gribi was second, ahead of tennis player Ones Jabeur. Turning to netball, Zambia begin their build-up to the 2015 Netball World Cup on Friday. The Netball Association of Zambia General Secretary Pritchard Ngoma told the Lusaka media on Monday. Ngoma says the national team camp in Lusaka is aimed at keeping the team in shape ahead of their maiden appearance on the global stage. Zambia and Uganda earned their passage to the World Cup during the Africa qualifiers in Gaborone, Botswana in November. They join Malawi and South Africa in presenting the continent's challenge for honors at the Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia, next August. Finally, in volleyball, Kenya will stage the 2015 Africa Men's and Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Nairobi, the Africa Volleyball Federation revealed in Cairo, Egypt. The men's contest is slated to run from the 5th to 17th of March and will be followed by the women's contest from the March the 25th to April the 6th. The two events are qualifiers for the World Club Volleyball Championships in May. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States has carried out an airstrike against what the Pentagon calls a senior al-Shabaab leader in Somalia. And that's it for this Tuesday, December 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.